Chrysler reports big losses and a little hope.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, welcome to the Morning Open. I'm Bill Radke. Chrysler opened its books to the public this morning for the first time since bankruptcy. We'll go there in just a moment. But first, the trading day is 20 minutes old. Where's Wall Street? Dow's up 32 points this morning at 11,149. The NASDAQ up 0.4%. The S&P 500 is up 0.3%. Morgan Stanley's up a couple of a percent. The bank says it made $1.5 billion last quarter. Apple says its quarterly profits nearly doubled over last year. How can Apple's stock be up almost 5%? But it is $256 for a share of Apple. And around the rest of the world, stocks are mixed. Here to discuss the world of formerly bankrupt American car makers now owned by Italians is Chief Economist Richard DeCaeser at Woodley Park Research, live from Washington, D.C. Morning, Richard.
Good morning, Bill.
So Chrysler just turned in its first financial report since being taken over by Fiat. There are a lot of numbers in there, but what is the takeaway?
Well, the takeaway is they're doing what companies do in bankruptcy. They're taking down costs. There was a huge one-time payment to the auto workers' healthcare trust fund, and presumably production cuts in various facilities throughout the United States. So it's cost-cutting. That doesn't mean, however, that they're out of the woods. They still have to do what companies need to do, grow revenues, and the evidence there is still sketchy. Market share was down to about 9.1% in the first quarter, 2 points below 1 year ago. So they've taken the preliminary steps to coming out of, becoming a more profitable firm, but there's still a long way to go.
Preliminary but sketchy. Okay, and speaking of the American automobile, Richard, there was an Associated Press poll out this morning that showed Americans now say the United States makes better quality vehicles than Asia does. How significant is that?
Right. Well, that is very significant because that has not been the perception for a very long time. What remains to be seen here, too, however, is whether it will last. Without a doubt, those results are being influenced by the problems Toyota has had with unintended acceleration. So as that news blows over, the reality of superior performance by Asian cars may shift sentiments back in the other direction.
Richard DeCaeser at Woodley Park Research. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
The Securities and Exchange Commission says, yeah, we got tough on Goldman Sachs, and we're not finished. The SEC's chairwoman, Mary Shapiro, told a congressional hearing yesterday, even though her regulatory agency blew it with Lehman Brothers, it is on the case now. Marketplace's Gregory Warner joins us live from Philadelphia. Good morning, Gregory.
Good morning, Bill.
How is the SEC promising to step up its enforcement?
Well, they say they're going to try to stop investment firms from hiding debt. This is what got Lehman Brothers in trouble. It shifted debt off the books just when it came time to release its quarterly report, so the company would seem healthier than it was. Mary Shapiro is chairwoman of the SEC. She spoke at yesterday's panel and apologized. She said her agency did have information about some of Lehman's accounting tricks.
The staff knew of some, did not know of others. There was not communication to Lehman that they needed to recalculate or provide new disclosure with respect to the public.
So that's Mary Shapiro. But here's the thing. The art of hiding debt from shareholders is not limited to Lehman. Most banks do some version of it. The Wall Street Journal looked into this. They calculated that firms hide on average over 40% of their actual debt. That's technically illegal under SEC rules. So Shapiro says the SEC wants to know how much debt the banks are really carrying. She sent a letter to 19 large investment banks asking them to tell them what is the difference between the debt you have now in the middle of the quarter and at the end of the quarter when you have to report.
Interesting. So then the banks respond to that letter and the SEC does what with that?
Well, first thing, they make that information public, which is what they're accused of with Lehman is not doing. Most investors were caught off guard with just how deep in the hole Lehman was. Second thing is the SEC is considering tighter disclosure rules. So if a firm would use a transaction to temporarily reduce its debt, it would have to make investors aware of that.
Marketplace's Gregory Warner. Gregory, thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
And post-volcanic ash cloud, planes are flying into Europe's top airports again, but an international industry group said this morning the eruption cost airlines at least $1.7 billion, and the group urged European governments to compensate airlines just as the U.S. government did after the September 11th terror attacks. This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, April 21st at marketplace.org. Ben Franklin gets a new look today. The government unveils its latest currency redesign, this time for the $100 bill. You and I will not be using this one for a while, but the goal of the new look is to deter counterfeiting of this extremely popular U.S. export. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
I checked my wallet, and nope, I don't have a $100 bill in there. Almost never do. But foreigners' wallets, well, that's a different story. Dennis Forg is an expert in coins and currency in Chicago.
Almost 70% of the $100 bills issued are overseas. It's the standard note to hold money in, no matter where you go.
And that attracts foreign criminals, says Michael Lambert. He's assistant director for cash at the Federal Reserve Board.
Because it does circulate so widely, it is the note of choice for counterfeiters abroad.
Dennis Forg says the new 100 will be harder to counterfeit and better looking, too.
We're the last country that has bland notes. We're colorizing like the rest of the world.
In addition to color, the bills will include embedded images that make them harder to copy. There'll be a big PR campaign before the new C-notes come out later this year. That's to give consumers, retailers, and cash sorting machines time to recognize them as the real thing. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Those tricky investments called derivatives are the focus of a Senate committee hearing today. Derivatives are deals that let people trade almost anything from wheat futures to home loans. Derivatives trades got some of the blame for the financial crisis, thus today's Senate hearing, as Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
Senator Chris Dodd has a plan. Bring derivatives out into the open. The Democratic lawmaker has introduced legislation that would require these complex instruments to be traded on a public exchange. Barbara Matthews is a regulatory consultant.
The exchange trading basically will funnel all activity into a standard format. And so the price of that trading will be visible to anybody who has an interest.
Like you might see on the New York Stock Exchange. But some people think regular banks shouldn't trade these risky instruments. That includes Democratic Senator Blanche Lincoln. She introduced her own legislation.
It means that if you're going to be a bank and you want to be a bank, then you need to be a bank and you need to spin off the risky activity that exists out there.
The bill would essentially make it nearly impossible for banks with insured deposits to engage in risky derivatives trading.
We have FDIC insurance, which makes sure that, you know, people are protected.
Mike Consul is a research fellow with the Roosevelt Institute.
What we don't want is that insurance to be used to run a casino. That's what Senator Lincoln's language does.
And the hope is this legislation could help prevent another financial crisis. Regulatory consultant Barbara Matthews says if the crisis is big enough.
I tend to believe that irrespective of what the law says, the government would step in anyway.
Today, lawmakers may begin to explore a compromise between Dodd and Lincoln's bills. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
You remember Cash for Clunkers, right? The government stimulus program aimed at boosting auto sales was a big hit here in the U.S. Various European countries had their own versions, and about a month ago, Russia launched one. Its $3.5 billion Clunkers program comes just in time. Russian auto sales slumped by half last year. Peter Van Dyke reports from Moscow the program is proving very popular.
A giant metal claw picks up one of several dozen rusty old Ladas from a parking lot at a car dealership in northern Moscow. Then it dumps it onto the back of a truck. The owner of each car got $1,700 towards the cost of a new Russian-built vehicle under the government's new program. Vladimir Ryabushka is the general director of a branch of Russia's largest auto dealer, Avtomir. He says 40,000 old cars were turned in to be scrapped during the program's first month.
Sure, the program will be a success. It was supposed to run for 9 months, but it's clear the subsidies will end earlier. Within 6 months, the funds allocated by the state will run out.
For the cheapest models, the rebate is a third of the sticker price. Without the government money, car buyer Vladimir Semyonov says he certainly wouldn't be trading up.
I don't have that kind of money to buy a new car, but I can sell my old ones to the government for 50,000 rubles and buy a new one.
Mr. Semyonov may have to wait 3 months for the Lada he wants. The manufacturer, car giant Avtovaz, is struggling to crank up production. Last year, it only escaped bankruptcy with state help. so it welcomes the increased demand. As in other countries, boosting car sales is a main goal of the program. But in Russia, disposal of the vehicles may also have another long-term beneficial effect. Vladimir Bespalov covers the transport sector for VTB Capital Investment Bank.
This scrappage program is something new for Russia, and many Russian cars previously just had been thrown away. You could see them on the streets. So the culture of junkyards has not been developed in Russia prior to this program. So if they manage to build these scrappage centers, this will be a good success.
Some say the program is a success already. Avtovaz says it has sold 11,000 cars under the program in the first month alone. In Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke for Marketplace.
Banks could face a major new threat to their profits, a double whammy, in fact, a pair of global taxes. That's the plan from the International Monetary Fund. From London, here's Marketplace's Europe correspondent, Stephen Beard.
The banks are not going to like this. The IMF plan is for two worldwide taxes to curb the banks' risky behavior and to fund any future bailouts. The first tax would take a slice of profits and pay. Banks that dole out big bonuses would be hardest hit. The other tax would raise a reserve so governments are ready for the next crash. But economist Avi Perceau is not convinced this is the way to go.
The best defense for taxpayers is not these taxes, but proper financial regulation that stops crashes happening in the first place.
Nevertheless, he says, when the G20 finance ministers study the plan at their meeting in Washington this week, they'll probably go for it. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And now we widen our gaze and take a look at how the rest of the world does business. It's our Globalist Quiz with Quizmaster Stefan Richter of theglobalist.com. Hi, Stefan.
Good morning, Bill. Are you ready for today's Globalist Quiz?
Let's do it.
In which area does Germany rank first in the world? Is it A, in exports, B, in solar power, or C, in cars?
Well, I think that Germany is Europe's biggest exporter. That was A. But for the entire world, I'm going to say solar power.
Wow. You floor me. You're absolutely right. And I would bet that almost nobody would figure that. I mean, if you remember, if you've ever been over there, Germany certainly doesn't rank among the world's sunniest places.
That's true. I actually was going to go for cars, but I thought, no, they're just famous for cars.
And you're right again. They have high-priced cars that most of us can't afford, and they still desperately try to sell.
Well, let's get back to them being number one in solar power. How do they pull that off? It's not sunny Southern California.
Well, it all depends in environmental policy, what the government plans to do. And in Germany, as in much of Europe, the government is interested in having sustainable forms of energy. If in Germany there is less sunshine naturally, well, one thing that helps is to have a regime that tax benefits the installation of solar panels. In fact, Germany has the largest installed power base of solar panels, which is what makes it number one in the world. And currently, many of those that are installed in Germany are produced in Germany. It's a question of environmental policies and tax regimes.
Very interesting, Stefan. Thank you for joining us this morning.
You're welcome.
Stefan Richter is publisher and editor-in-chief of theglobalist.com. Visit the daily online magazine on the global economy, politics, and culture at www.theglobalist.com. And finally, we told you yesterday the doormen of New York City were set to go on strike last night at midnight, raising the specter of New Yorkers taking out their own garbage and sorting their own mail and even opening their own doors. The New York Times published instructions yesterday just in case. Approach door, grasp knob with right hand if right-handed, left hand if left-handed. Using freehand push door, you have now created a large vertical opening. As it turns out, the doormen reached a deal with the city's building owners. No strike, crisis averted. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. Thanks for joining us. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media. The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.